adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Welcome to Rete This Week, a casual podcast that brings you the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and with us, as always, we have Paolo Baloni Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
We've got a Mr. Chris Baselli.
Hello, everybody.
We've got a Gigi Julian D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Gigi!
Hey!
Ooh. And we also have Paolo's favorite singer, of course, Adriano Celentano.
I guess everyone knows the English version of the song Stand By Me. I think it's by Ben E. King.
And, I think you probably just pissed off a lot of people because that's what they thought was going to play.
Yeah. always. Honestly, we should probably just have like Italian versions of English songs just to annoy people that way.
Like Maneskin?
Well, like Begging?
Hey, they're coming to Montreal and Toronto.
Michael, you should go. Yeah.
I should go? Yeah. I don't hate Montreal. You hate Toronto. So we should go to Toronto.
No. I go to Montreal, though, but I don't think I would go to. Yeah. Great song.
Artsy culture.
I prefer the Frankie Fowler version, to be honest with you, the Four Seasons, but...
Of course you would. Given two options, you will choose the one that is 50 years old.
Always. With an oldie but a goodie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, hey. Can't deny that.
No.
Okay, welcome to the show. Is that enough? Is it all we want to do for arts and culture? Is there anything else?
No,
I think we covered everything.
This is going to start to be an arts and culture podcast. We don't think so? We don't want
that? Well, with your expertise in arts and culture.
Oh, so. Okay. Hey, yeah. Paul is looking for points today. Remember I used to do points? Maybe I should bring points back. That's 20 points for Paulo. 10 points. I think it stopped after 4 episodes. okay, Paul has 20 points. Let's all remember that. Okay, well, yeah, I guess since arts and culture is done, we'll get into Serie A. We'll cover the weekend that was of match day 6, I believe. And then, of course, you also had some Champions League, some obviously Europa Conference League, all the fun European competitions that we had midweek. So we'll dive into those later on, as well as preview what's to come in those same competitions this upcoming week. So with that being said, I guess let's just get into it. So, quickly first, on Saturday, the first game was Napoli hosted Spezia, and Napoli win 1-0. It took a last-ish minute from a goal from Raspadori to actually win the game for Napoli, but they do come away with 3 points in that game. Quickly, we'll go into the Inter game, who hosted Torino on Saturday as well. So, Julian, big notes on that game.
Not very many notes. Inter, we'll get into Champions League shortly. But coming off 3 losses in 4 games, kind of needed to bounce back against a good Torino team. First half was a little cagey. Torino defended very well and actually created more of the chances. Good for Inter. They weren't overly clinical. Handanovic did play well. I think he had a probably good 5 or 6 fairly decent saves. And Zaghi as well, I thought he finally made early subs. They were more attacking subs. He was showing he was going for it. And it paid off at the end. They finally get the breakthrough. Barella plays the ball through to Brozovic, who makes kind of a back run or back post run, a nice little doink. Michael, I don't know if you'd classify it as a doink. I think I would. just taps it kind of over Milinkovic-Savic and into the far corner. And Inter hang on for the 1-0 victory. So it's a good bounce back game from them, but they still have 2 games to finish off this coming week where they are both must wins, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it almost becomes a nail biter just given how late that comes, right? And I remember during the game how frustrated, we'll say frustrated, yes, some fans were, and you were specifically. Yes. Now, again, is it kind of like done and dusted since they got the win, or do you think there's like more to it than that and we may see some things pushing forward as well from this?
I mean, the win is obviously good. They still need to figure out their defensive line because that's still an issue. As I said, Torino had honestly probably 3 to 4 good chances, but they just weren't clinical. All the shots were kind of in Handanovic's vicinity, and he was able to save everything. So, I mean, it's good for him. He had a bounce back game as well, but Inter are giving up chances too easily still.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's move forward here. The last game on Saturday was Sampdoria host to Milan. Now, Chris, what do we got here? What happened here?
We have, again, everybody, I'll give my piece, and then as we've all
and then we'll only let Julian talk, and then that's it. We'll move on.
Of course, anytime Milan get points, it was obviously unjust, and they didn't deserve it, according to Paulo. So I will say my piece, and then Paulo will tell us why they actually should have lost 4-0 and should be sent down to like a pro. But I'll get going. So it was actually a good start for Milan to the game. Rafael Leao had a good first 30 minutes for sure. And the first goal did start from his wing, so on the left wing. There was actually a great run from Giroud that doesn't really get noticed in the build-up to the goal, but he kind of drags a center back and the fullback out of position. It gets whipped in, bounces around a little bit, and it ends up falling to Macias on the far side. I think Aldero could and should have done better. He didn't really get much on it, if anything. I thought he maybe not necessarily had to keep it out completely, but should have got a hand or a leg to it. But that was the first goal of the game in the 6th. Iron goal of the game came in the second half, but early in the second half, Rafael Leao went for a bicycle kick and got his 2nd yellow of the game. So essentially 45 minutes for Milan to play down. A 57th minute. He kind of gets, it's a cross in the left hand. Too far out for Maignan to get to it. And it's a nice glancing header from him to make it 1-1.
Did we lose Chris?
I think we lost Chris. So that made it 1-1. And then a PK in the 67th from Giroud would give Milan the lead at that point. Now, since Chris has decided to leave us, Paulo has free reign here. So, Paulo, with your 20 points, how many points do you want to allot to this? This is how this works now, apparently. All 20. Got it. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'll take advantage since he's not here. I got no problem with the PK. I'll grant him that since he's not here, and this way he doesn't hear me say it. Because if you look at the angle behind the net, yeah, VR does touch the ball with his hand, and it happened to be called this time. Julian will get into later about other examples, but the problem that I had with this game was number one, after Liao got sent off, Michael Fabbri, who was the ref for this game, lost absolute control of the match. And Giampaolo said it in his press post-match conference, said that he was looking to even out the game. And honestly, watching that as a non-Milan fan, you do kind of get that sentiment, that sensation that Fabbri was looking to kind of make up for that red card that was given to, or the double yellow that was given to Liao. And when and saying that, there should have been, in my opinion, there should have been a PK that should have been called against Chiar, who took out I believe it's Sabiri in the box, and Chiar played no attempt on the ball. And again, that was in my opinion a makeup call for sending off Liao and to even up the game. And Chris, now that I believe that Chris is back, I don't think you should have any complaints about the double yellow that was given to Liao.
Who knows if he does?
Sorry, how many excuses did you give? I missed about 2 minutes there because of my crappy internet. So how many excuses did you give to people already?
So to be fair, I don't think he was saying that the actual PK, the Giroud PK, was fair. But I guess, yeah, really, he didn't give too many, I think, honestly.
I heard something about makeup call about three times.
Well, he did say that multiple times, but I think he's just saying at that point that's what he felt happened. Now, Paulo, is that accurate?
Yeah, I felt that the non-PK call was a makeup call for the double yellow.
The non-PK call.
A makeup call for what? Like, if a makeup call would imply that he got it wrong, and if he got it wrong on the double yellow, VAR would have told him to go take a look at it.
No, but you can't do that. And plus, it was, in my opinion, it should have been not a straight red because it wasn't intentional. But
it can't be a straight red.
No, because I just said it wasn't intentional. But the thing is that. And I do agree with what Giampaolo said, was that after Liao was sent off, Fabbri made an explicit attempt to balance out the game. That in the sense that it was that all the 50-50s went Milan's way.
Okay, but look at who are making these comments. You have the manager of the guy who lost and eventually got kicked out of the game, and then we have you agreeing with him, the guy who finds excuses every week for why Milan. So
again,
won. So I don't
again,
buy you, that. Okay, Paul and yourself feel like they were makeup calls. I need to hear from somebody neutral.
Okay. Michael, any of you watch this game? Do you have any opinion on this game this week? Because he wants to hear someone from someone neutral.
As a neutral, I would say that typically, there is an issue, Chris, with referees trying to balance the game to make it, I guess, I'm not sure, competitive until the end. I honestly don't know. That being said, I don't know if I subscribe to it in this game in particular. I think Paulo has a point in that perhaps that could leak into something like this, but
that wouldn't be like. Even if that is a case, sorry to cut you off, that's not anything new. Like, I think we've talked about this before, right?
Yeah,
where a red is given, whether it's in the second minute or the 42nd minute, and there are some attempts that we think where they're trying to balance it out. One thing I will say, which I think, or I might have got cut off when I had to back out there earlier, I thought the pen was the right call, but I will agree it's shitty. Because if you look at it, Villar is, assuming it was him, he was kind of sandwiched behind Giroud and in front of one of his players. Like, I don't even think he can see where the ball is when it comes in. It just so happens that his hand is sticking out. But by how definition. The rule is written yeah. now, it has to be called. But it's unfortunate, but it has to be called. Sorry, yeah, Julian, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Or no, Mike, I was going to say, I thought the PK was harsh. And I get your point, and I do. And yes, his hand was away, but VR has no... There's nothing he can do. He's jumping up into the challenge. Drew heads it down onto his arm literally from, like, 6 inches away, if that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought it was a little bit harsh, and we'll see in another game where a more obvious one wasn't called.
Isn't
and
called.
Again, it's yeah. going to come back yeah. to consistency, in my opinion. I just want consistent rules.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the rule itself is harsh, right? And it got enforced in this case, but...
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
We've chatted about this multiple times, and I'm sure it'll come up again. Yeah. Probably next week.
But again, I haven't heard your excuse for why Liao shouldn't have been sent off.
I didn't say Liao shouldn't have been sent off.
That's pretty much what you're implying. Like, I'm assuming you have issue with the first yellow card.
To be honest, I don't remember the first yellow card. But I don't remember when he got his second yellow, my reaction wasn't, one or both of the yellows were bullshit. It was just move on with the game. So no part of me is arguing about the double yellow. I mean, like you said, it wasn't intentional. There was obviously no intention from him to injure the player he went up with. But again, his foot was up near the player's head, and the referee has to make a call there. So.
Okay, well, I don't know. I'll remind you of the first yellow card. It was in the first few minutes of the game. And again, Julian, I want to mention something from last week. If you remember, Lazio-Napoli, where Mario Rui kind of blocked off Lazzari with his arm.
Yeah.
So Fabbri was the VAR for that game as well. And that wasn't called, but when he was the ref in this game, he called Liao raising his arm against, I can't remember who the defender was, but raising his arm against the defender and kind of forearmed him in the face.
Oh, when he was dribbling.
Yeah, when he was dribbling. Yeah.
Yeah, there, I remember the call now. Yeah.
So
I could argue that's soft, but again, that's I'm not gonna make an excuse and say that should have. There's so many what if scenarios. We could go back to the first minute, I'm sure, and say what if that was called a yellow, and I could say he should have been more careful on that play in the 47th minute, but he wasn't, and he got his second yellow. So that's how it goes.
They should develop computer referees that will call it the same every time. You know what they should just do? Just play FIFA, because the reality is, I mean, maybe in those two, you'll complain about tackles that weren't called or whatever, but still, the same thing. Like, if it's a black or white, you know what I mean? There's no gray area with a lot of this. So to Paul's point, like, again, last week, the same ref didn't think it was necessary to intervene when it was in my opinion, again, there was enough there to at least have the ref go and look at it. They didn't even want that to happen. In this game, he calls it. So... how can he, how does he have any leg to stand on is kind of what I'm getting at. And we know that there is a thread throughout this weekend, and we'll get to more obviously as we get to the games, but there's just such piss poor refereeing. And I don't know why they refuse to address why those things happen.
I think it goes back to Julian's point. It's the inconsistency which is making everybody frustrated, right? If that's always going to be a yellow, then it's always a yellow. Or if certain players are always going to be a handball, be consistent. But as we know, it hasn't been, and that's where the frustration from us and I'm sure the players is coming from.
Good. So, Michael, I'm going to help you segue to the other games. The problem is we talk about inconsistency is because Gianluca Rocchi, former referee himself. No, Gianluca Rocchi is his first name. A former referee himself made a bet on developing a younger generation of referees. And I think we're seeing that this bet has been another utter disaster, and it's only been 6 weeks into the season. Like the World Cup, or this actually the international break after this round of games cannot come soon enough for the Italian Referee Association.
Yeah, and I just want to say specifically too, in a weekend where obviously some things happened earlier, or I guess late last week before these match days happened, where more eyes were going to be on these games, and they just like shit the bed so hard. Like, you know, no one's watching the Premier League because obviously it was canceled because the Queen died. So now, again, you have your marquee games where there's like such poor performances by the people who were supposed to be leading the structure of the game. And they're again, like Paulo said in a couple shows ago, that they're saying that they're trying to referee in a certain way as well, that's like closer aligned with what those English leagues, et cetera, are. But I don't know. I just don't, unless those things that specifically happened this week are similar to what happens in the PL. I don't know.
No.
But
no.
Yeah, I just, in either case, it's piss poor form. That's it. Let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on to other piss poor performances.
Yes. Yes. Okay, first, just to go through some more scores. So Atalanta hosted Cremonese, and they actually thought they probably had a winner late. So they scored in the 74th. Demiral scores, but then Valeri cancels it out in the 78th for Cremonese. So it ends in a 1-1 draw. Next, we'll get into, I guess, Paulo wants to chat about two games specifically. So, Paulo, we'll do them kind of at the same time, but I'll talk through the scores of Bologna-Fiorentina and then Lecce-Monza. But Bologna hosted Fiorentina. That game ends 2-1 in Bologna's favor. So, Martinez scores in 54th for Fiorentina before Barrow scores in 59th, and Arnautovic, the capo, scores in 62nd. And a double yellow in the 90th would send off Igor, and that's how that game ends. And then for Lecce Monza, again, Lecce were host here, but Sensi for Monza gets the opening goal in the 35th before Gonzalez scores in the 48th to tie it up, and that's how that one would end 1-1. So, Paulo, go ahead.
Well, okay, so just to preface this, instead of talking about, you know, Monza getting their first point ever in Serie A, or Arnautovic as capocannoniere with 6 goals after 6 games, or Thiago Motta taking over officially after this game. No, but we're end up talking about more shit performances from referees. And so there was two of them, two
more big Moviolas.
Yeah, more Moviolas. Yeah, exactly. Like, should we call the Moviola League for fuck's sakes? Anyway, the Lecce Monza game was just absolutely disastrous. Because like, Julie and I were talking about the PK that Lecce should have had, where it was clear that the ball hit off the Monza defender in the box. I think it was very late in the game as well too. And then that was the first one. The second one was again in the box. I think it was the Swedish player. I can't remember his name for Lecce. He's a midfielder. The ball hits off his hand as well, and again, no intervention from VAR. So you have VAR intervening in the Sant Milan game, but yet there was two, probably even more clear incidents of handballs in this game, and there was no intervention whatsoever.
Is Helgason the midfielder you're talking about?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Julian, I think you can better describe the call that Lecce had for the handball.
Yeah, it was. The ball was kind of flicked. It was crossed into the box. I think the Lecce player got a flick on with a header. And I don't know the Monza defender, but he kind of went to go chest the ball, but ended up outstretching his shoulder and his arm, and the ball literally bounced right off his arm and out for a corner. Like, it was a clear as day handball. And yeah, they just didn't review it.
It could have ended up 2-2 for all that matters, or one would have been called and the other not. But the thing is that each one of these teams could have come away with the 3 points. at the end of the day. And by not calling this, like, by not calling these obvious PKs more obvious than the one against in the Saint Milan game, potentially cost one of these teams 3 points. I mean, and the bad refereeing is damaging the credibility of the league, which is already shot in the first place, and B has been could send down one of these two teams or even both.
What I would add, which is kind of slightly off topic, is to mention Fiorentina, who through 6 games only have 1 win, and that came on match day 1. So last 5 match days, no wins.
Oh God! And that match day 1 was the Radu blunder.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
And they thank you for the segue. They have a right to be pissed off, because on the winning goal for Arnautovic, Kazis took out a Martinez Quattro on the sidelines, which led to the ball being swung in for the Arnautovic tap-in or poke. Mm-hmm. So again, if VAR would have intervened, Easy would have saw Kazis just kind of like trumble over Quarta with no attempt to play the ball. That game could have ended 1-1, and Fiorentina could have picked up another point.
Yeah, they just don't care. They don't care at all. Like, that's the reality, is that, like, if you wanted these fixed, you would put in the effort to make sure that there wasn't these discussions all the time. So obviously they, like, are fine with this. This is literally the game that they want to be seen played. So if you are the body of, you know, the body of soccer in Italy, and you want to, like, if you want to do anything or see anything change, then they have to implement things that make sure that stupidity like that doesn't happen. But they don't care either. You know what I mean? Like, as long as they're, you know, money's coming in, et cetera, like, they will just as easily or just as happily go out and be like, yeah, well, you know, the refs, you can't complain to the refs. Here's a fine to these managers, because again, it all comes back to them anyway. So it's a fucking racket.
They're rolling with the motto, no publicity is bad publicity, right?
Yeah,
now,
and so they're absolutely wrong. But
so the problem is that they're the same culprits. Luca Pirato, he also had problems a few seasons ago, and I'm pretty sure
his name is literally Pirate.
Well, no, his actually his father was one of the referees suspended for. No, was suspended for Calciopoli, but anyway. Maresca, again, sempre tu Maresca. again, Fabri is another one that has a list of disastrous errors. Yeah. And then Simone Zozza.
Someone should put together a list of just like...
Sozza. Yeah.
Someone should put together a list of all of these, like, again, or even you could do it enough in like the last 2 years to I guess justify wanting a change in direction for these referees, because again it happens to be a discussion point every weekend, and it's not like you get some like fair games or fair wins that like determine the league status in the end. Like Milan, for example, won this game, but if you're implying that, and I'm not saying Paulo's right or wrong, but again, if Paulo can make a point that, you know, Milan doesn't deserve those 3 points because of X, Y, and Z, which are directly correlated to refereeing decisions, then that's an issue. Because then again, you give Paulo credence because you're performing poorly at your job. You know what I mean? Like, it's, and that's the true travesty here.
Is it? So
you see that backhand compliment, Paulo?
Yeah, I saw that. I got that. Yeah. The issue here is that, like I said earlier, the bet on. Also, I forgot to mention that Orsato was the ref for Bologna Fiorentina. Mm-hmm. But to me, that was a VAR. Whoever was the VAR made the error because he didn't call him to go take a look at it. So the thing is that I guess we'll I guess we should move on and to wrap up the whole clusterfuck.
And then we'll
get into a larger discussion about the fucking shit show.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to next was Sassuolo host to Udinese, and Sassuolo actually get the first goal for Tazi in the 33rd. And then it's completely flipped on its head after Ruan gets a red card, straight red in the 43rd. And the second half, late, but Udinese come away with the win here. So Beto scores in the 75th. Samardzic scores in stoppages, and Beto scores again in stoppages. So it ends up being 3-1 for Udinese in that game, largely because Sassuolo were down a man for extended period of time.
So can we just talk about, I mean, Udinese before we get into some more VAR bashing?
I was going to say fourth place with Udinese you want to talk about?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, again, it's been six games, 13 points, great. I'm curious, they were nowhere close to this after the, six games last year. But again, let's see, like you said, let's talk about the positions after 10 games.
You're right.
It's a little more settled.
You're right, but I just wanted to point out that they have 13 points after six games.
Which is good for the second most amount of points.
Yeah, in the league, and the fact that you know they put up another three goals after beating Roma 4-0 the week before.
Yep, true.
So
guess who they play on Sunday?
And they play Inter on Sunday. Exactly. Gee. So I mean they're picking up form at the right time, and they're playing teams who are struggling for form as well. So I mean I guess this mixed season of random games here and there have been working for the smaller mid-table clubs.
Yeah.
And it's also another main point is probably keeping Udoji has been a very important part to this early good start to Udinese.
Yeah, very fair. Okay, let's move on to Lazio-Verona. So that game ends 2-0 in Lazio's favor. Immobile scores in 68th and Luis Alberto 90th minute goal. So again, that ends 2-0 for them. So they, needed points because, again, they were looking like after coming off of a loss last week as well to Napoli, they kind of needed a rebound and they got it. Okay, moving on to the best game this weekend. So Juventus host to Salernitana. And wow. So Candreva scores 18 minutes in. A PK is given to Salernitana, and Piątek scores in the 45th. And for the first time since 2004, Juventus go into a half, I think at home, down 2-0. I think that's also the stat that I saw.
I also want to point out, I saw a stat that this was the first time ever that Salernitana had a two-goal lead in Serie A.
Look at that.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Oh. Anyways, the second half happens. So, second half, Bremer scores in the 51st, relatively early, so that Juve are hoping to get a comeback here and get back into the game. So it's 2-1. They leave it late after a penalty is called very, very, very late. So in the 90 plus, Bonucci steps up to take the PK, and it's actually saved, but he's the first at the ball. So he's able to slot it in afterwards, and that ties the game up. So again, they save that in that sense. They at least tie the game, and it's very late. So, you know, now it's for whoever can kind of go in and take the 3 points if there was a last-ditch effort. Well, there was a last-ditch effort. A literally last kick of the game corner is flicked in, and Milik heads it, flicks it over to the far corner, and Bonucci also tries to go for it, but it doesn't hit him. It just goes into the far corner. It's a goal. They think they've won it. Milik takes off his shirt in celebration, which was the second yellow, so he gets a red. Seemingly the game is over. It was last kick of the game, and it ends 3-2. Not so fast, because VAR intervenes, and they say, "Hey, referee, sir, you must look at this because it needs to be looked at." So he goes to look at it, And I guess what they determine is that Bonucci, I would say, and we've all talked about it, I think harshly, says that Bonucci interferes in the play. He takes a impotent attempt to hit the ball. Exactly, to hit the ball. Does not hit it, does not do anything. He's just there, and they deem that that was enough to cancel out the goal to seal the victory for Juve. So it comes back and it's 2-2. There's obviously a kerfuffle in that. Allegri, I think, gets a red card. Cuadrado gets a red card, and Fazio also gets a red card, which, again, enough with that just in itself is enough to say, okay, well, Juventus were hard done in that specific moment. And if that happened to any other team, we would not hear the end of it. Okay. Just that in itself. Okay. If that happened to Milan, Chris would be on here saying, Paulo this, Paulo that. If that happened to Inter, Julian would be saying, you know, Chris this. I don't know. But Julian would probably not complain. He would just say Inter weren't good enough. Maybe that sounds like Julian.
No, I would have been very angry.
Okay. Well, that's this way. I added onto this is the fact that Candreva actually kept Bonucci on the whole time. So even though Bonucci impotently tried to flick the ball in as well. No, impotently. There was no finish on his end. Candreva still fucking kept him onside. So even after all that, and what they said is that VAR didn't have that image. What the fuck are you talking about? What kind of Mickey Mouse league is this? This is pure insanity. This is insane. It's absurd. This shouldn't happen. This should not happen. It's actually so funny because, like, again, in itself, it was a harsh call to say, you know what? No, we're not going to give that goal because there was a possible interference on the play. But the fact that he wasn't even offside at the end of the day, because they didn't see the image, the complete picture. They were focused on the potato image of the box. Is just, again, is mind-blowingly dumb. Who wants a crack?
You know,
I'll
Chris
go quick.
Okay, go ahead, Julian.
So while the original decision excluding Candreva is harsh, I still think, oddly enough, it was actually correct. I know Bonucci doesn't touch the ball. I know, I believe it's Sepe's in the net. He doesn't move for the ball.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I agree with your assessment because, again, we have seen that before.
Exactly. So that is Milan Derby Coppa last year where Benacer's goal was canceled out because Giroud was in an offside position.
Right. But so, and again, that's the consistency that we were asking for. So again, I understand it. Yeah. It's harsh, but again, but yeah, some things are
fair. Actually hilarious. The fact that Candreva was keeping him on side anyway, so it's all moot. Like literally,
exactly, literally, and it's so funny too because I've seen so many people post these potato images as well of no, Candreva actually wasn't keeping him on side, but they're like, they don't understand how math and science works, and they're taking videos from an angle that shows Candreva, like a little bit to the right. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, filming it, you know what I mean? So that Candreva's to the right and Bonucci's to the left, but like, they don't take into account how offside works. I don't know. But of course, it was this was an Inter fan that I saw it from. So I was going to say, typically it would be a Milan fan, but this is a little bad on their end.
Yeah, that's fair. No, he was clearly offside. There's no question.
Who's next? Chris.
Sure. If it was any other club, I would also be just as mad. But because it was Juventus, I can smile. I had a great sleep. Juve's in what place right now?
Eighth, I think, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Is he? It's irrelevant.
No, it doesn't matter.
They're 4 points.
It doesn't matter. They're four points back.
Out of first.
It doesn't matter.
Irrelevant. It's irrelevant. No, that's a stupid. That's super irrelevant. Next,
we literally just had this conversation that the table doesn't matter.
They're in eighth
until
place.
After 10 games.
And again, because it happened to them, it puts a smile on my face. That's all.
Chris,
again,
Milan are literally 4 points out of eighth place. Like.
Do I have to talk about how close Juve are to relegation? Is that
They're 9 points away from relegation, whereas Milan are 13 points. So,
Okay, again, I knew he was going to mention this. Okay, so I'm glad he did mention it because again, the other goons from Milan Twitter were talking about how his probably his same reaction, saying, "Oh, I'm going to remember this for a while." I think one of the comments, again, we got the explicit rating on the show, is the fact that I think it was one of them was like, "I'm going to keep this and I'm going to like jerk off to this picture."
Oh my god! Hey,
I said, "Listen, I'm just saying what this Twitter group does." I mean, the most hilarious part is the fact that they don't remember what happened to Muntari. Okay.
Of course we remember.
Oh, okay, well then what's the point? I mean, you and you guys were like, "Oh, well, I'm going to keep this picture. I'm going to keep this picture." Okay, yeah. Well, we're going to keep the picture of Buffon stopping the ball inside the net. and that can't happen anymore because they have goal-tying technology. That's the best part. So who's laughing now? Still, 10 years later, we're still laughing.
Paul, I don't love that argument.
Mike,
but...
I got
no, but I'm just saying. I'm just saying. But I'm just
got
saying.
Got him.
Got him.
I'm just saying. They wanted to bring it up, saying how we're gonna keep this. You know how we're gonna bring this up all the time. Okay. I mean, two fan bases can play at that. I mean, which one's worse? Which refereeing error is worse that we're going to all remember?
This incident made me happy. Don't turn my happy moment into a sad moment.
Oh, there you go. That's my whole point. That's exactly what I want to do. Anyway, getting back to the present day.
Yeah, okay, hold on. First, Chris, besides all that bullshittery, do you have any notes on, again, the circumstances that the murky circumstances, the Merkinstances, is that what Ian Mendes says sometimes? Anyway, so the circumstances of what
it's
happened.
Nothing new to add. Like, it's more of what we were talking about before, just with consistency and, you know, Paul's comment about the decisions or the poor decisions that get made in the VAR room and how it makes the league look. So, I mean, like I said, we've brought this up week after week after week, and this just kind of, I think, was the boiling point, so to speak. So, nothing more to add than that.
Yeah. There's another one. I mean, okay, let's actually talk about the game. What was impressive before I get back into the actual, you know, shitty decisions from VAR was the fact that Mazzocchi made McKennie look foolish on that first goal was absolutely hilarious.
Weston?
Yeah.
Weston?
I mean, Mazzocchi absolutely destroyed him. Like he burnt him clean. Like it was impressive for the first goal. So that was, you know, we come to appreciate how Salernitana are playing, and you know, good on them if it lasts for the rest of the season.
Yeah, the worst part for me is that you can't even enjoy that Salernitana are playing well and you know that they came out to this, like, you know, like Julian said, this historic first time that they've led 2-0. They can't enjoy that because now it's like shrouded in this like stupidity again of the refereeing decisions that don't have any sort of just like common sense or like anything. If a fucking idiot on Twitter can find a picture that shows that Kondrava's onside, the person who is running and operating the game needs to have that picture or needs to know, hey, I have to check that. There's no reason that fucking Jimmy Babalook can check it because he, I don't know, has access to a replay, whereas these guys don't. It's insanity. It's literally insanity.
And going back to the best part was, I think Salernitana responded, responded to, you know, the out, you know, the, what's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, responded to the consequences, the ripples effect from the poor decision that led to the goal being chalked off. It was saying that, you know, there was contact from Bremer on Piontek. But they said, like, you could complain about that, but that's not our style. And I find that was absolutely hilarious. I mean, as they say in Italian, gassato, you know, Michael, quanto ci gassa.
Yeah.
And you know, that was hilarious. I find that hilarious in a good way. Because, yeah, I mean, I looked at it again, and, yeah, there was contact. And that's something that was missed for Salernitana. And of course, I mean, Chris can talk about excuses and all that, you know, like, you know, but there was contact, and I feel bad for Salernitana, that they probably could have came away from the first half 3-0 up.
Yeah.
Allegri ball.
Yeah, that specifically is a leg ripple.
Yeah, I mean,
dig a hole so far that you can't get yourself out. That's exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Milik changed the game in all aspects of the sense, and
yeah, just
all sense of the, yeah.
No, I was gonna say, maybe, I don't know if we want to wrap it up, but I was just gonna ask. So Milik's, this is a serious question. His red card stands, right? Nothing gets.
I think no, so. No, they might appeal it.
No, that, well, yeah, I guess they could, but it's.
I don't think you're going to win that appeal.
No, for
no,
sure.
No, but yeah. They should peel it regardless, because, you know, you're sent off for a goal that doesn't stand. I mean, but taking off your shirt, right? Again, I understand, you know, the whole thing, but regardless, I
think they're wasting their time.
Yeah, yeah, I know, but appealing. Regardless, they should still appeal, you know, for the sake of getting Milik back for next week, right? That's
I guess
the whole
it's
point.
Worth a shot, but I would say, yeah. Hold your breath, because.
No,
that
not at all.
Pretty, that's a pretty black. Like, not even Sadio can screw that rule up. You take your shirt off, you get a yellow.
Yeah, right.
the problem. No, hold on one second. The problem that I have is, if they asked for the image, and they didn't get it, and then they still called it off. I mean, and overturned. A goal that stood.
That's right. It was given exactly. It's not like they was called whatever. They had to overturn it. So they had enough evidence. That's them declaring that they have enough evidence to say, yes, this is not a legal goal, so it should be called off. That's literally what the decision. That's what the decision was.
that's shocking. That's the most shocking part. The fact that they didn't have the image, and they still overturned a decision. Is in my mind, like, a level of incompetency beyond recognition.
To Chris's point, though, he's saying that because it happened to Juventus, no one's going to lose sleep over it because it happened to Juventus, which is, again, just stupid.
Again, honestly, I have to give credit to some Inter fans. The ones that actually understand the game. I saw some comments saying this happening to Juventus. It was a bad thing. It's a bad thing that reflects poorly on the league, and now Juventus fan base has a reason, as Michael says or said earlier, has a reason to gripe about. Has a reason to hold. Any injustice, against the rest of the league, and that negatively affects the credibility and the competency of the league, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because and again, it's.
But of course, Milan fans, that they don't care about that.
No, they
very well, Paulo.
That's
don't
right.
That.
Yeah. Checks out. Okay, just to wrap this up again, I think it's we already know it's stupid. We already know everything that's been happening here is dumb.
But,
we can all agree
point.
On that.
The linesman was in line with Kondrela.
Anyways,
that's a shocking part.
It's all stupid. Okay, we can agree it's all stupid, especially on a weekend again where it's heightened visibility. So everyone saw how fucking stupid this league is. And the worst part is that it's not going to change a goddamn thing.
No,
it's not going to change because they're like, that's the game. Fuck you. I don't want to watch this game. I don't want to watch this stupid, like this literal, like it makes me want to just pull my hair out because it's like, why would I even give time to invest into this product when this product does not want me there because it doesn't treat me with the respect that I want. Like, again, it happened to Juventus, so I'm mad, and you're mad, Paulo. But again, if it happened to Milan or Inter, imagine how mad they would be too. Like, those guys would not fucking shut up about it. Juventus fans are used to this crap, so they're saying, okay, you know what? It's gonna blow over. I'm telling you, it's not gonna there's not gonna do anything about it. But if this happened to anyone else,
oh, we hear about it for the rest of the season.
There would be riots in Milan. There would be riots, 100%. Anyways, we're moving on. This league is dumb. I might not watch next week. Okay. Moving on to Monday's games. Empoli hosted Roma.
I forgot we had another game.
That's right. We had one last game here before we take a break. So Empoli hosted Roma. And we actually had our goal of the match day from the new talisman of Roma here. So Dybala scores 17 minutes in. And again, here's that audio for the goal of the match day.
Mancini's cross, away by Luperto. This is Dybala! It's extra special from the magician himself. La Hoya sparkles once more.
God damn it, I missed that. So he takes the ball at the top of the box after it's deflected out in front of to him, and he kind of he stops it and takes it kind of on a half volley, I guess, and shoots it into the top left corner for a beautiful goal, goal of the match day. That makes it 1-0, 17 minutes in. Ben Nelly actually ties it up before the half, and a goal in the second half from Tammy Abraham makes it 2-1 in the 71st. Akpro gets a red card, a straight red in the 87th for Empoli. But that's how it would end anyways, 2-1 in Roma's favor. So Roma win and get all 3 points there. And again, move them back into proper positioning after their shock loss to Udinese last week.
Just a couple of notes here. Akpro was sent off after he hit the post. So he had a chance to tie it up, actually. Pellegrini missed the PK. I don't know if you mentioned that.
I skipped it, no.
Okay, yeah, so you missed a PK to make it 3-1. Could have put the game away. Instead, the game was still open. And another important point. Okay, so something's wrong with Roma's right back position. Chris, maybe you can talk about this. Maybe it could be a something related to playing a 3-5-2 or a variation of the sort. It's always the ball came in. It bounced right in front of Mancini and... seems like Bandinelli made a run into the space behind, I believe it was Mancini and Celik. So we'll get into the Champions League, and something similar happened in PSG Juventus. So, and could that be something down to the formation of a 3-5-2?
Yes and no. I mean, it's difficult. I guess I'd have to look at each scenario specifically to truly identify. But if I had to guess just based off what we know, I could say it's very possible that knowing that Spinazzola is on the other side, teams are purposely trying to attack down the other wing back side. And at the same time, I believe Ibanez usually plays on the outside of the three as well. And he's the more athletic of the two, in my opinion, anyways, between him and Mancini. So if you put those two things together, so you have the slower of the two center backs, Mancini on that side, and then you also have the right wing back who is not Spinazzola. So again, without seeing the video specifically, I could just guess that it's teams that are making that tactical decision to say, let's stay away from Spinazzola and let's go out to slower center back.
Well, because it was kind of the same situation happened against Udinese, right? In the first goal, where Udoji, who was a lot, who was very fast, of course, and you know, took advantage of a mistake from Karsdorp. It was something similar this week, right? There was a ball comes in from the left side, bad defending, like very slow defending, allows Bandinelli to come in and put the ball away.
Yeah, like I said, it's possible. Obviously, Udoje poses a big threat on Udinese's left side, but I think it's a matter of potential that they're just trying to stay away from Spinazzola and go at Mancini, who can't recover as quickly as somebody like Ibanez.
That's my all my points for the Roma game. And Michael, I think you'd be sad to know. I think Dybala made some comments after the game where he was he was disappointed that he didn't press as much as Mourinho wanted to, and some Roma Twitter was saying that that's peak Juventus mentality.
That's right. It's bleeding. It's bleeding into other clubs. Hey, fucking good for Roma. Honestly, yeah. I was a proponent of this move for him. If he wasn't going to be Juve, I think that was a great spot for him to go because, again, he can elevate that club, and I think I'd like to see that.
And another point that a lot of Juventus fans are making, he played, I think it was what, six straight games, something like that, and hasn't picked up an injury and has...
Yeah, without getting hurt.
Yeah, without getting hurt, and has like three goals and like a few assists.
Yeah. Anyways, it's sad and I don't want to think about it. But what I will say is after this league has made me yell at my friends on the internet, I think back to our good friend Ilya Brzgalov and his quote here.
It's only game. Why you have to be mad?
It's only game. Why you have to be mad?
That also reminds me of a quote from the director from... Direttore from Roma Giallorossa TV.
Mm-hmm.
Stanno andando una persona a un altro mondo per cosa per il calcio.
Okay.
There you go. same thing. But I wanted to put in a quote related to calcio and also mentioned that legend himself.
Yeah, typically, wouldn't he? I thought he would be madder. Like, I feel like that's not.
He was yelling it. I couldn't replicate the yell. You know, because you actually have to watch the video. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Now that I got my cathartic yelling out, I'm sure the neighbors heard me. Why don't we take a break? Let's all. I don't know. Have some comfort food here. We'll come back. We'll regroup. And then we'll chat through the European conquests of the Italian squads here. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the podcast. Okay, so now that we've all had a little bit of alcohol, we're more relaxed. We'll get through we'll get through the rest of the podcast. Incident free. That's what we'll say. So we have Europe to go through. Yeah, God willing. What's the thing? Inshallah.
Inshallah or Sadio Vola.
There you go. I prefer Inshallah. Sounds more fun. So we'll go through Europe. Obviously, we will review and kind of preview, and then we'll get into just a quick Serie B minute, and we'll preview Serie A for you quickly. So let's start with Champions League. So we'll start with Tuesday's matchup. So the first, the earliest game from an Italian squad was Milan, who were away to Salzburg. So what happened with Salzburg-Milan?
So Salzburg, I haven't seen a lot of them play. It's really I guess just Champions League and European games, but they came out pressing very, very high, very, very aggressively, and I guess that's kind of what you know, they're known for a little bit as a club, but also their manager, Matthias Jaisel or Jaisel, I don't know how to pronounce the last name, but I was impressed with how they were pressing. They definitely put Milan on their back foot. And I would say the first 15, 20 minutes, they were, this is Salzburg, were fairly successful with their press. And they did come up with the first goal, 28th minutes, Noah Okafor. He put, I believe it was Kalulu on skates, little nutmeg, and then Kalulu falls to the ground and Okafor puts it away. So I actually thought, I don't want to say Salzburg were the better team from the first 30 minutes, but I do think they deserve that first goal. Because like I said, they came out on the front foot and made Milan really earn or really work hard to play up from the back. That being said, Salamakers, who I'm still surprised he got the start, he was able to tie the match in the 40th minute. And that would end up being the final score, 1-1. Milan did dominate possession. Final numbers were 66-34, 66 in favor of Milan, of course. Milan had almost double the passes, but as nice as that is to say, Salzburg still ended up with more shots and more shots on target. So I would say that a 1-1 score is fair, a draw is fair, whether it was 1-1, 2-2, doesn't really matter. The last comment I'll say is that, and just as a reminder, this would have been Milan's first game after the Inter derby match. Milan did look tired. There were a lot of guys that played in this game against Salzburg, all played, you know, the full 90 minutes against Inter. Obviously, those are heated, emotional matches. And so I think that showed a little bit here in this game. But that's going to be the schedule for all of the, you know, European, all of the Italian clubs playing in Europe. They're going to have a packed schedule until the World Cup. So they're going to have to deal with that.
Right. So it's, again, it's a little bit of, you know, not that they're lucky that it kind of ends in 1-1 and they're able to get a point. It's, again, it's understandable given the energy that would have went into the earlier match against Inter. And I think what's important to note in that group as well is that Chelsea lost to Dinamo Zagreb. So, yeah. So, you know, even though, you know, you only get a point, at least you're still not in, you know, tied for 3 and 4. You still have some space there that, again, is allotted to you because of that loss to by Chelsea.
Yeah, that's a good point. Obviously, nobody would have predicted that. So it kind of turns the group upside down and keeps it wide open right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that also cost, what, Tuchel's job, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a... We could probably ramble on about that, but yeah, he got the sack after that.
Yeah. okay, let's move on to the other Italian squad playing on Tuesday, and that was Juventus, who were also away to PSG. So, Paulo, what happened in that game?
I mean, the first half was all PSG. Mbappe scored 5 minutes in. Neymar looped a ball over to Mbappe, who absolutely rifled it past Perrin. Again, it was that play that I was talking about before the break, where they pick the space between the right back and the right center back in a 3-5-2.
Yeah, and this was that Bremer on that side?
It was Bremer on that side.
Yeah,
as well,
looked. Yeah, it was. I mean, a great play by PSG. I think that's just like, again, when you have that kind of quality up front, they made Bremer look dumb. But it was really slick. But yeah, really slick play.
But they made Bremer look dumb. But like, I mean, it doesn't help where you have Bonucci behind.
Sure.
Behind Bremer. I mean, if Bonucci. If you actually play someone who has speed, I think it would have been possible to close down Mbappe. I'm just saying hypothetically, because they did it again minutes later. It was the exact same play, because I remember this like quite clearly. It was the exact same play, and they did it again. This time Mbappe shot it wide.
Yeah.
But they finally get their second goal in like the, I think it was the 22nd minute mark. Hakimi on the right side crossed it in for Mbappe, who again rifled the shot past Perrin. So again, it was complete domination by PSG until halftime. Juventus come out. They bring on McKenny, and minutes later, he scores at the back post off a corner. And honestly, Juventus were had their money's worth to tie the game. They could have easily tied it up. And also, I forgot that in the first half, Milik hit the crossbar before PSG scored their second goal as well. So, and they had also had multiple opportunities in the second half. They probably played their best Calcio all season in that second half, and they still didn't come away with anything to show for it. But honestly, Bonucci easily could have made it 3-1 for PSG. I don't know if you remember, Michael. I think Bonucci kind of like was in the box. Bonucci again, I guess, without impetus. Without
oh
impetus,
God!
Incompetence, I guess, is the way.
It comes to him. It's almost it comes to him from like the left side, I guess, and he just like heads it to the, or is it head or it's his chest?
Yeah, no,
whatever,
head,
whatever
yeah.
it is. It literally, he just puts it right in front of the top of the box where there's a PSG player.
Yeah,
it's like again, it's. Yeah. I don't know what school of defending he went to, but it wasn't. I guess for the last 10 years he's been in practice, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Man.
Again, Perrin kept Juventus in this game, and I mean it's unfortunate that second half performance didn't get anything out of it. But the thing is, 2-0 down in the first half here in PSG Juventus. And then again, same thing that happened on the weekend, 2-0 down in the first half to Salernitana,
yeah.
And there's a few jokes that they were saying, Allegri was saying that Salernitana was actually even more dangerous than PSG.
Yeah, and the only note I want to add is this is the right kind of frustration I should have while watching Juventus, is that you know they lose this game, but it's you know at least there is some entertaining things to watch. Typically, again, I'm also pulling my hair out at how frustrating Allegri is playing the team, that it's just like crappy football. But again, at least in this instance, there wasn't like just stupid refereeing decisions that got in my way. So I'm just happy to say that Champions League doesn't apparently go to the same school that the Italian referees go to.
Well, unless it's that Turkish referee, but that's another story.
Yes, yeah. Or Michael Oliver. Let's move on. So that was Tuesday's games. We'll go to Wednesday, where Napoli were host to Liverpool, and this was a big game.
Yeah, sorry. Excuse me, just clear my throat. So I don't know if anybody would have been betting against Liverpool in this one, just given that, you know, Liverpool have traditionally been that English powerhouse. Obviously, they've done well in Europe. But Napoli came out firing, and it was amazing to watch. I'm jumping the gun here, but I was talking to some friends of the show who are Napoli fans earlier tonight, and I was saying to them I didn't want this game to end. Napoli, not only were they able to keep the ball very well, but they were able to possess it with a purpose. They weren't just knocking it around just to knock it around. At times, it looked like Liverpool's midfield were static. And it led to, you know, a fairly early goal, albeit it was from a penalty. Zielinski put that one away. There was also another penalty call in the first half. The foul was called on Van Dijk for, I believe it was stepping on Osimhen. And Osimhen was down for a few minutes. And I was surprised that he ended up being the one to take the penalty. To add on to that, I think it was his right ankle or right foot that was injured in the play. And as we know, he's right-footed. So it was interesting to me that he would step up and take it. I'd be curious to know if Zielinski, you know, passed down the opportunity to take a second penalty in the game, or if Osimhen demanded it, or if Spalletti wanted it. But it was saved. But before the first half would end, Andre Franck, Zambo Anguissa would put one away in the 31st minute. And then Simeone again. And so Simeone ended up coming on for Osimhen. And then a little story about Simeone. I don't know if you guys heard about it after the game, but I guess when he was 13, Simeone got a tattoo of the Champions League logo somewhere on his wrist area. Anyway, so when he got it, you know, his story where he told his mom that, you know, I'm going to play in Europe one day and I'm going to score goals, so on and so forth. So he gets his first European goal. Luis Diaz in the 49th minute got one back. And then I think I already mentioned Zielinski's second goal in the 47th. So it finished 4-1. Like I said, it was great to see Napoli do well at home against a so-called European powerhouse.
What was interesting, I think, was it last week I said this is probably the best time to play Liverpool, for Napoli to play Liverpool, because Liverpool had so many injuries in their roster. And the fact that Liverpool has a poor record in Naples as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this, we'll see how this sets up the rest of the group for Napoli, but they couldn't have asked for a better start.
Yeah, and of note, I guess, is Ajax also won, so they're both obviously joined top of the group, but we know that Liverpool are going to bounce back, right? So it'll just be...
They'll get their points, yeah.
Yeah, right. So it's just a matter of, again, between the two of them, and, you know, they're obviously they would be competing with Ajax most likely, so it's just going to be between them who can amass the most points going forward, I guess. So it's just important that, again, this happened against Liverpool for Napoli, because, you know, now Napoli still have to play Rangers, who might not have the same quality as Liverpool necessarily. Okay, that was good. Let's move to the final match in the Champions League for the Italian squads, and that was Inter hosts to Bayern.
So, I mean, I don't think any Inter fan was realistically expecting a win out of this game. However, I do think they... Yes, however, I do think they gave Bayern a little bit too much respect. In the first half, they kind of sat back on their laurels and kind of let Bayern go about their business and try and pass the ball around. It was Andre Onana's first start, and he actually made quite a few good saves early on to keep Inter in the game. However, Bayern did find the breakthrough, a bit of a lapse in judgment between Dumfries, sorry, not judgment, communication between Dumfries and D'Ambrosio, led Sané in basically one-on-one with the keeper, who he rounded Onana and put it away. Inter, they didn't go away easily. They did come back out stronger in the second half, and they actually had a half chance to tie it, but Dzeko hit a shot right at Neuer. And then shortly thereafter, Bayern made it 2-0. I know Gagliardini came on with about 10 minutes to go and actually had a decent sub appearance, won the ball in Bayern's box for Correa, who had, again, a wide open shot, and he put it wide. So it ends 2-0 to Bayern. Inter had a fairly rotated squad, but Ella didn't feature. He apparently had a slight knock. They benched De Vrij as well as Handanovic. But Onana did play well, and I think that actually kind of sparked Handanovic to his Torino performance, as we spoke about earlier. However, the 2-0 loss kind of hurts, but really the team they need to beat that they're competing with in this group is Barca, who won their game against Victoria Pilsen.
Yeah. Barella's knock was perhaps his confidence after that Milan game.
Maybe. They did ask Inzaghi about it, and he said he was warming up to come on when it was 1-0, but Barca right. scored the second goal, and he figured
okay.
best not to risk him.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, and it was the right call, right? The
yes.
Played yes. against Torino, and they won.
Yeah. But yeah, so they do play. Are we getting into the next match day? Because it's already upon us.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Just quickly. So yeah, so Tuesday, I know Inter are away to Victoria Pilsen at the early slot at 12:45 Eastern time. Not sure what that is for European time. I guess that'd be 6:45.
Yeah, and oddly, they're the only Italian team on a Tuesday, because on the Wednesday is where... So... Dinamo Zagreb on Wednesday at 12:45 our time. Then at 3 is away to Rangers, and Juve are host to Benfica. And that's on Wednesday again, all three of them.
So I think it had to do with the
international break or something, or the Queen.
No, it was the Queen. It had to do with the Queen.
The Queen.
The Queen's ceremony, because I think that now, I think there's the she's not lying in state in Scotland, but there's she's lying at a cathedral in Scotland. So I think that it has to do with that as well. But again, now there's what, 3 games on Wednesday with Italian teams.
That's what I said. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, anywho. That's Champions League. That's the wrap up there. So we'll see what happens.
One more point. I mean, it's a must win now game for Juventus
and for Inter,
and for Inter as well. I mean,
and for Milan.
It would help.
It would help. Yeah, for Milan. But Allegri before that PSG game said that the home game versus Benfica is the must win.
Yeah.
And I think I already said it there, a must win. And I think that will create a lot more momentum going into the league, some of the league games as well.
Yeah. And I mean, Benfica won their Maccabi Haifa, right? So they're going to get their points from there. It depends on how they do against PSG, but I think likely we can expect PSG to be the cream of the crop in that group. So like Allegri said, it's really, you're right, it really is that those matches that are going to be important. So yeah, we'll see how that works out for eBay. Okay, next let's move into Europa League. So we have of course in Europa League we have Roma and Lazio. So Roma, first off, were away to Ludogorets. What happened there?
So, I mean, Roma had a lot of chances in the first half, but failed to capitalize. I know Dybala had a couple of shots from outside the box. So then nothing happened for a good 70 minutes. It's a very tactical game. I think, honestly, that pitch out in I can't even pronounce the out in Bulgaria, I'll say it that way. It's a very small pitch, so it couldn't really play the ball around. So it was a very tactical game. And honestly, Ludogorets got their tactics right because they scored first. It was a good run from Kaoli, who like ran past Ibanez and Mancini to score the first goal. Roma tied it up through Eldor. It was a nice header to make it 1-1. And then Nonato outweighed Ibanez to place it at the far post. And that's where Ibanez struggles, is his one-on-one defending inside the box.
So his job.
Exactly, his job, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, like you said, it ends 2-1. So Roma lose that game, which doesn't bode well, obviously, for them. But maybe they'll take right now at least the league's success, yeah, in comparison, but right?
I think because it came down to turnover. I think last year Mourinho complained early on in the season that he couldn't change
His squad.
His squad. He made 5 changes in this game, and it showed.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Lazio host Feyenoord.
Lazio Feyenoord. So very similar to the Napoli-Liverpool game. Lazio also came out looking very strong, very positive, dominating a lot of the ball. Led to a Luis Alberto goal in the 4th minute, followed by Felipe Anderson in the 15th minute and a Inter legend Matias Vecino goal in the 28th minute. So 3-0 Napoli at half.
Lazio.
Lazio at the break. Like I said, dominated a lot of the ball. Napoli would go and make
Lazio.
Oh, my goodness. Lazio. Lazio would make it 4-0. And more specifically, again, the Inter legend, Matias Vecino, 63rd minute. So that made it 4-0. And then Santiago Jimenez from Feyenoord put a pen away in the 69th minute. And then another goal in the 88th minute. But finished 4-2 for Lazio, not Napoli. So good start for them. Just very quickly, stats-wise, possession was, of course, in favor of Lazio. 63-37, and then they actually lost out on total shots to Feyenoord 17-15, but had more shots on target 8-4. So good start for Sadi and his side.
Yeah, and again, this is probably one of the games, again, specifically in that group too, that they're going to want to take points from for sure.
Yeah,
the win is massive because again, Feyenoord is probably the other top level team there. I mean, Midtjylland's there as well, which we've seen them have some, you know, run in Champions League as well. But it's a little bit of a, yeah, it's a good result for them.
Definitely.
So here's the point that I wanted to make. Lazio did make some turnover. They rested Sergei Milinkovic-Savage, but they were forced to play their front three. But at least their midfield, they were able to turn over their midfield, and it actually benefited Lazio by, you know, by Vecino scoring two goals.
He was actually named the Europa League player.
That's right. That is right.
Good for him. That's why he's an Inter legend.
Yeah. Hey, he clinched some top four the 1 year.
Yes. That
started the Inter revolution.
Yes, but Darmian won you a league. Anyways, let's
never forget, Julian.
Never forget, Julian. So
because he scored an 80th minute goal against Cagliari.
Yes, that won you the league.
That secured like the points to win you the league. Okay.
That's right. That's right. Okay, just moving forward here. So on Thursday, that's the next match day, obviously, for Europa. So Lazio are away to Midtjylland in the early game, 12:45. And then Roma are at home to HJK at 3 o'clock. So, again, important game for Roma on their European conquest if they want to make it back-to-back European trophies. Again, that's what Thursday will look like. Also, past Thursday, we had Fiorentina, who were host to Rigas, and this game actually ends 1-1. Barak scores in the 56th, but it is tied by Lich in the 74th, Rigas. So Fiorentina don't have tremendous luck, I guess, in their match, but again, still at least is a point. And they will face Istanbul on Thursday as well at 3 o'clock. So they've got some more.
And that's probably the most challenging game.
Yeah. And well, I was gonna say, they beat Hearts in the first game, I think like 4-0. So we'll see how Fiorentina stack up against these squads. And that's what's interesting about this conference league, right? Is because
competition rule.
Yeah. Well, you get like, again, you get the lower teams that typically wouldn't have any kind of shot at Europe still competing in Europe, right? So it's just a little bit of a different level of competition, but it's still it still has a little bit of that like European swagger that that exists in like Europa and Champions League. So it's fun to see. Okay, that is that. Do we yeah. Any other notes on either of these competitions?
Well, what I find interesting is that how, again, Fiorentina should have beat Rigas handily on paper. It also just emphasizes Fiorentina's struggles to start off the season. I think it has to do with the fact that Fiorentina are playing every 3 days, something that they weren't used to last season. I think Italiano said as such, the fact that they're playing more and training less. I think Chris could probably touch upon that. Also, a stat to point out, Riga's first ever point in a European competition.
Forza.
They're the Latvian? Not Latvian.
Latvian, yeah.
Latvian. It is Latvian? Okay.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Well, again, that's our European review and preview. So that's kind of it for that. So, Paula, do you have a City B minute that you want to get to?
I do, yes. Palermo beat Genoa 1-0. Cosenza lost 1-0 to Bari. Cagliari beat Benevento 2-0 away. Brescia beat Modena 3-1. Parma lost 3-2 to Tirana. And Spal beat, I believe it was 10 men, Venezia 2-0. So quick fixtures for the next match day. Brescia play Benevento. Frosinone versus Palermo. Cagliari versus Bari. Regina versus Cittadella. Venezia, Pisa, and Genoa, Modena. So the top three in Serie B so far, Regina with 12, Brescia with 12, Cagliari with 10.
All right.
Oh, and also a quick Pescara Calcio update. They beat Latina 2-1, and they're 2 for 2, excuse me. And the next game is on Tuesday versus Crotone.
And they rejected your bid to buy the club?
No, that was Chieti.
Yes, quite.
They wanted like €400,000 for like a percentage. I'm like, no, thanks.
No,
I'll pay for that for that's my pension, exactly. Yeah. But I would have taken it $400,000 for the whole thing, but yeah,
wasn't in the cards, my friend.
No, it wasn't in the cards. Maybe one day.
That's right. You can buy Portoro or La Roque.
Yeah.
Rapino Cup.
La Roque. Yeah.
Okay, so that's that. Thank you for City B Minute. And the only other order of business, I guess, is previewing what's to come this weekend for City A. And actually, we have a really interesting Sunday, but we also have Friday and Saturday, obviously, to get through before that. But just so you know, there is a Salernitana Lecce on Friday, in case you are looking for something to watch. But then again, Sunday, we have a bunch of good games. I think the sneaky game, I think, of this match day is probably going to be Udinese-Inter. I think that'll be a good game just based on form from Udinese and Inter's perhaps struggles this year. So that could be fun. It's a trap game for Inter, for sure. And then other important matches, we have Roma host to Atalanta and Milan host to Napoli. So those are another two big games on the docket. And of course, we have the relegation battle of Monza-Juventus.
So what I want to touch upon, because again, Roma play Helsinki on Thursday, and then they play they play Atalanta on the Sunday. Now, we saw already what turnover did to Roma last week against Ludo Goretz. You know, what's the game plan for Mourinho? Does he try again with the turnover in midweek and risk another loss in Europa League? Or does he go for it, play, maybe change one or two players and, you know, try to go for the win and then, you know, play a pretty solid Atalanta team so far this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happens, but it's it's going to be either way. I think we're gonna have some nice football this week from the Roma side.
Just one more point, Michael. So Leao is suspended, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Against Napoli. What was interesting? I was watching Italian TV. And I think Chris, your favorite commentator, Carlo Pellegatti, was talking about how Pioli was experimenting in training and trying to figure out a formation to suit a Leao-less Milan side. And now that Origi's injured, so it's most likely going to be I think it was a 4-2-3-1 with
that's what they play now.
That's what they play now, but it's going to be De Ketelaere down the middle with I guess Salamakers on the right or someone and then someone else has to replace Leao on the left. But the thing is, if Origi didn't get hurt, which Julian said he got hurt, right? That
yeah, he's out for a bit.
He's out, yeah. So I think Origi, they could have been a front two with Origi and Giroud if Origi didn't get injured.
I think Rebic might be available again, and I believe it was a 4-3-1-2 that he was actually experimenting with. So no traditional wingers in that formation, but it would allow obviously De Ketelaere, Tonali, all those guys to start, and then you play with two up top, which is something different, which is something I've been asking for from Pioli. He needs that plan B for, you know, whatever, when Leao is injured or when things just aren't working in the 4-2-3-1, just something else to throw at teams once in a while to keep them guessing.
Who's on the right? Brahim?
Oof. Messias, if I had to guess.
Mm. Or Salah Makers.
Yeah, it's really one of them two at this point. Maybe Adli, but Adli, I don't think is on the Champions League roster. So we will see.
Yeah.
Well, no. It'd be interesting against Napoli.
Yeah.
Because Leao is not there. So, I mean, yeah. Let's see. I don't think Rebic is gonna be fit for midweek, but we'll see against Napoli. I'm curious. I think that, as Michael said, is the best game.
Yeah.
Of the weekend, and we'll decide who's top spot.
Well, that's it.
With less than 10 games played.
Yeah, both of these teams are level on points and without a loss. So, again, it could very well continue that none of them will have a loss. It could end in a draw very easily, but it could also mean that one of these teams is dealt their first blow, their first loss in the league. So, fun. Fun times. Fun times to be had. Okie doke. Any last notes before we wrap up the show? Let's start with... Who wants to start? Chris.
Sure. A bit of CanCon. I forgot last week to bring this up, but the Canadian women's national team, so they kind of did a doubleheader against Australia, September 3rd and September 6th. They won the first match 1-0, second match 2-1. I believe these were just straight up friendlies. There was no qualification attached to this of any kind. So obviously good to get the two wins there. And then the Canadian men's national team confirmed a friendly against Japan in the lead up to their World Cup kickoff. So that'll be a good match, a good test match anyways, because as we know, there was that mess that happened during the last international window, and they didn't get all of their, mm-hmm. their matches in. So it was good for them to get another one confirmed. That's it for me.
Paul.
I think I speak for everyone that no one cares about this international break coming up. I'll probably watch it, but honestly, I couldn't give a rat's ass if they lose. If they get relegated to the B pot, honestly, I hope they do, because Mancini should have been sacked after not qualifying. I don't care. Like, I don't care that they won the Euros every 2 years. It's a new cycle, and he failed to recognize that. And in my opinion, it should have cost him his job. But anyway, again, there's just to me that, you know, there's still talk, and honestly. And it's honestly, no one wants to hear it, to be honest. Like, that's, no one cares.
Yeah. Julian.
You know I'm going with the fourth Inter.
I was going to say a fourth Inter. Of course
you did. Hey, they got two must-win games coming up in 5 days.
I love how it's already October and they're must-win games.
Hey, they're ahead of Juve right now, but. Champions League, this is it's a must-win game regardless. They need to take all 6 points from Victoria Pilsen to have any shot at getting out of the group. So,
okay. Listen, Juventus are still undefeated, okay, in the league.
That's right. That's right. Remember that time we went undefeated in the group stage in Europa League and then we got fourth place or third place? Because I do.
wait, they went...
Undefeated.
Yeah.
In qualification, but it was like 6 draws. So they got 6 points and they didn't make it out of the group.
In the Europa League?
Yeah. I want to say like 2010.
I'll look it up. Okay, well, while you look it up, I was doing some research because I was, because again, Juventus are still undefeated and 10 points back and a bunch of draws. I remember, you know, 10 years ago, we were talking about how, you know, Milan. I remember, Chris, you were saying that Milan should have won that league because the fact that Juventus drew so many other games but still end up winning the title. So I kind of did some research to see where Juventus were after six games in that season, and Juventus actually, well, back when they won that league, the undefeated season, they actually had only two more points than what Juventus had after six games now. So they had 12 points compared to 10 points. So again, it's not the end of the world. I know, Michael, we said that we're not looking and making judgments after 10 games, but I think it's time to, you know, time to calm down expectations and not talk about crisis when they haven't lost a game in the league.
Yeah. So 2010, 2011, they were in a group. Interestingly enough, this was the group. Manchester City was in this group.
The oil money had just started. Yeah, I guess.
That's right. Exactly. Red Bull Salzburg, Lech Poznan,
yeah,
and of course Juventus, and they had six draws.
And I guess
is Conte the coach at this time?
Not yet. I think who is the coach?
Was it Ciro Ferrar?
No, that would have been Del Neri at that point.
Yes, yeah. But he got sacked after though. Didn't he?
Does it say? Is it RB Salzburg? Because I wonder if Red Bull, that's the first thing that went through my mind was, did Red Bull complete that takeover yet of Salzburg?
It says specifically Red Bull Salzburg, but maybe that's just because let's see what it says.
Or is it just by default?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But because 2010.
I think with Salzburg, right, they had to buy the team when they were in the third division or something like that and work their way up. So I feel like 2010 would have been one of their first few years in Europe as a club.
I think they're still Red Bull. I think at this point they are actually already Red Bull. Red Bull era starts in 2006.
Okay. So then, yeah, 2010 would have maybe even been one of their first years in the Bundesliga or second year in the Bundesliga.
Right.
Well, they have their own Austrian league. Yeah, you know that, right?
Oh, sorry. This is Salzburg. I'm thinking
Leipzig.
RB Leipzig. Right.
Probably.
Right. RB Salzburg. Good point. I'm off today. I'm calling Napoli, Lazio. Lazio, Napoli.
Hey, listen. I got in your head rent free there.
Man. Not at all. Okay.
That's right. Let me. I'm just going to read through the score lines of Juventus and all of these games here. So, against Lech Poznan. So, Chiellini scored twice, and Del Piero scores a goal.
I think I remember that game.
They tie 3-3. Rud Neves gets a hat trick, a penalty in the 14th, and then they actually score in like the 90 plus to tie it. So that's the first one. Against Man City, Johnson. Who's that? That's Adam Johnson.
Oh God.
For City, he scores in 37th, but that's after Iaquinta opens the scoring for Juve. Oh,
my God, it's just like a game of criminals, eh?
Yes. For Red Bull Salzburg, Juventus, so that game ends 1-1, obviously, so a tie. Svento scored, and then Krasic with a goal. And in the return leg, it's a 0-0 tie. What else we got here? 1-1. Next is Lech Poznan. Iaquinta is.
I think that was in the snow.
Sheet. Yeah,
pretty sure the game was in
December,
the snow.
Yeah, December 1st. So that makes sense. In Poland too, right?
Yeah.
And then Juve City. So Giannetti and canceled by Joe for City.
My God, that you took me down memory lane with those score lines.
There you go.
With those and those.
Happy to help.
I think I remember. I used to watch those games on streaming back when it was like easily accessible. And
Holy fuck. Okay, so the attendance for City Juventus in the first game in Manchester, 44,900, so 45,000 people. For the December 16th game, where Juve were host to City in Turin, so in December, December 16th, attendance, 7,000.
Wow. I mean, that's like that's probably the same amount of people who attended Juventus Salernitana on the weekend. So,
oh, what a time to be alive. Anyways,
yeah, we went down memory lane for too long.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it for us. Then I have nothing to add other than not Forza Inter. What's the opposite, Paulo?
Inter Merida.
Malocchio Inter. Maybe.
Milan Merida, I should say.
Milan Merida, yeah, that works for both ways.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody for listening. Sorry for screaming before. I hope that the FIGC fold and AIA fold and who else, Paulo?
Lega Serie A.
Yeah, I mean that's all coming. Anyways, we have probably couple good years left in us before none of these teams have any money. So let's I guess enjoy it while we can. Sadly, thanks for listening, and we will recap. Games. Oh my God, Paulo, what?
No. Sorry. I mean, there's international break. So what are we going to do next weekend or next week?
Oh God. Oh, who knows. Well, maybe we'll start. We'll get a recap. I have 7 games is enough to like go through and see what the standings and stuff are at to kind of get a good first initial look, and then we'll revisit after 10 games, anyways. But yeah. We'll see. We'll figure that out next week. okay, that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Follow us on our socials at RTW Calcio on both Instagram and Twitter, and we'll see you next week. All right, bye.